The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show here on the Para-X Network. And this is Heidi. And this is Stephanie. Oh, wait, no, Stephanie's not here. She got booted off of Skype because that's just how we're going to end this year. You know, this is our holiday show. It's our last show of the year. And I just don't think 2019 would be right without some technical issues from Stephanie on Skype. I just think that is, I don't know, it's well, probably just the way we should end the 2019 year, our last live show, I should say. We will have reruns the next 2 weeks. But so here we are on our holiday show, and we have a fun show tonight, and we're going to get to that just in a second, and hopefully Stephanie will get on here shortly. But, you know, hopefully you all have been surviving the holiday season. I know I have quite a few people who have been contacting me and coming into the studio the last few weeks, especially just really wanting a reset and to just do a lot of cleansing. I think people are looking forward to this year ending. You know, a lot of people the last couple of years have been like, oh, I can't wait for this year to be done and I'm looking forward to next year. And I get that. I really do. I think that there's a lot of things that we can look forward to and a lot of things we're going to be good riddance to. But also, you know, to just appreciate maybe, you know, some of the tough stuff that you've been through this year that has helped you, you know, maybe look for those silver linings. And, you know, it is good to do some self-cleansing, you know, however you can do that. If it's, you know, going to see an energy worker or someone who does massage or some kind of body work or just doing things for yourself too. This time of year is really nice to just take care of yourself and, you know, just do some cleansing to wash away maybe stuff that you're done with, that you're ready to let go of for 2019, and what you want to bring in for 2020. You know, we're starting a new decade, and it's, you know, all sorts of possibilities and potential. And so I think that's something to think about anyway, as we, you know, kind of end 2019 with our last live show of the year and look at our first show coming up at 2020. I'll talk about that here because we're not going to be live for the next couple of weeks. We do have a guest coming on the first week of January. She is going to be talking about astrology, which we thought was kind of fun for the first week of the new year. And her name is Patricia Lewinsky, and she is actually a shamanic Egyptian astrologer. So maybe not something you've heard about before, maybe something that's new to you. So we thought that would be kind of a fun twist on the astrology, you know, look at things. But anyway, so that's our first show next year. That's our first January show where we have shamanic Egyptian astrology. And so we did ask her too, if anybody, or she could look up maybe some general projections for 2020. So we'll see how that plays out. But, and we'll ask her, you know, how locked in some of those predictions or projections are. We'll see what she has to say about that. So anyway, I think we have Stephanie back on. Are you with us, Stephanie?
Here I am. Here I am.
My Sorry. Goodness.
You know what? We have to finish out the last live show with this.
You know, I already said all of that. I just said it's like, what else would be, you know, how else would we end without you having a Skype issue?
Well,
how else 2019? So
exactly. And you know what happened is I told you I had got into Skype about a half an hour before we got online even, and everything was fine. I was looking for updates. It had none. And then like 2 minutes before we all got on, it said, oh, there's an update available.
Apparently her update is still updating. She froze. I should take a screenshot of this picture. I'm going to do that because I send that to her. Maybe I'll post it on our Gathering Facebook page. We'll see. She's got to figure this out, kids. I'm telling you. I'm going to put that out there. I think you should, you know, it's always, if any of you have been on Skype recently, and you know that if it freezes and you're on video, you get this awesome picture. And so I did take a screenshot of that. That's Stephanie in her Skype rant. And I will send that to her, and she can post it if she likes. Someone, let's see here, I'm going back in the chat room quick before we get on to what we're talking about. Sherry in the chat room just said, Lefse. And hey, Sherry, I'm with you. Lefse all the way. Actually, I haven't made my Lefse this year, and I should get on that because there's not much year left. But I do have a couple of days off. Maybe I'll make it on the 24th. Who knows? But we will... I'll keep you tuned in on the Lefse on how it works because it is my favorite this time of year. If I can actually do it, I will talk about this because Stephanie's not quite with us yet. So if any of you have ever slept funny and then like you pinched a nerve or something, so I'm looking at Lefse and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it at least for the next couple of days. I slept funny. Oh, Stephanie, you're going to love this. So I slept funny, right?
Yeah.
And now I woke up and my shoulder is just like sharp pain, whatever. So I know it's because I slept funny because nothing's wrong with my shoulder, except I can't use it, my arm. So I have like this T-Rex arm going on today. I have like one little short little T-Rex arm because I can't do anything. It's like I can't reach for things. I can't put my coat on. I'm like, so I see this post in there about Lefse. I'm like, oh, I can't use a rolling pin right now. That's for sure.
Well, yeah.
So we'll see because I've got my little T-Rex arm.
You can't have a T-Rex arm and roll out Lefse. Can I just say you got to have both arms working all at the same time?
Yeah. Yep. So I'm going to have to wait on the whole rolling out the Lefse thing. But anyway, hopefully, Steph, you're with us for the duration here. Because we have an awesome guest tonight.
We do, and I'm really excited because he was on last year, also on our last show of the year, I think, wasn't he? I can't remember if we had shows the next 2 weeks or not. But
well, no matter what, it was our holiday show.
Exactly.
And so this has now made a tradition, mm-hmm. year two.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tradition. And so I'm really excited for our show tonight because we have Kyle is back with us from the International Paranormal Museum and Research Center. So, hey, Kyle, how you doing?
Hi, Heidi. Hi, Stephanie. How are you guys?
We're great.
Excellent. So we're super excited to have you back this year. And for our second annual holiday show, Kyle is our third musketeer here tonight. And mm-hmm. we put it out to you to say, hey, what do you think if you wanted to talk about anything related to the holiday season and something paranormal, odd, whatever, what do you think? And tell us, please do tell us what you came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, of course, Christmas is one of the best times of the year. As we talked about last year, there's all sorts of good monster stories, from trolls eating children to St. Nicholas restoring pickled children that were murdered. So it's a wonderful
I forgot
time
about that one.
And so this year I kind of wanted to think about the Christmas lights and not the ones you put on the tree, but the mysterious lights that show up in the sky, some of the more famous UFO sightings that have happened. And fortunately for us, one of the most famous UFO encounters ever actually happened the day after Christmas. So I guess I'm cheating a little bit, but it still works, you know.
Mm-hmm. Christmas time.
Exactly. So, yeah, I have a lot of that stuff. Before we get into that, of course, the first time I was ever on your guys' show, it was to talk about the Mothman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Kyle, did we lose you? Uh-oh. Well, we're just having all kinds of fun tonight, aren't we?
Oh, boy.
Well, are you there?
Oh,
there he is. So you were talking about the Mothman. Can you hear us? He must be in and out of signals, I think.
Well, hopefully we can get him back in, because we can't leave everybody hanging there. This is, like, crazy good stuff.
I know. It's going to be a fun show. So hopefully he gets back that signal. He was telling us earlier, before we even were on the air, that he was having a problem with the signal wherever he is. So hopefully he can figure that out.
Yeah, he's on the move. So he had to drive somewhere to find good reception.
Yeah. Yeah, he was down in a holler or something down there in Kentucky. You know?
Something like that.
No,
absolutely.
I hope he does come back, because he's a fun guest, and this is our tradition. So, you know, hopefully he'll catch that signal pretty soon. My goodness.
Hello? Wow.
There he is.
Hey, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened there.
That's all right. So, yeah, the first time you were on, you were talking about Mothman. That's why we wanted you on.
Yeah, absolutely, which, of course, is one of my favorite stories. But 2 days ago was actually on December 15th, the 52nd anniversary of the bridge collapsing, the Silver Bridge collapse.
Oh, that was yesterday, huh? Wow.
2 days ago.
Yep, December 15th.
Oh, yeah.
That's wild.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was, of course, the last time anyone ever saw the Mothman in Point Pleasant was when that bridge collapsed. So they just had a nice little memorial service out there and everything.
Oh, good.
Did you go?
Yeah.
Unfortunately not. I didn't make it up there this year, but I'd like to go for the next one. And this year was actually special because, so that bridge collapsed in, like I said, 67, and it had been underwater, like, in the Ohio River since then until this year. Like, this year it was finally, like, viable. There's technology, and they had enough money to be able to get it out efficiently. And the bridge is now finally out of the river there. So it's a very special year for the bridge.
Wow. I didn't know it was still down there.
Yeah, I didn't either. Where did they put?
Right now, it is actually an art installation at in front of the... So when the bridge collapsed, there was no, like, bridge safety office in West Virginia. And because the bridge collapsed, they created a bridge safety office that actually, a couple years after that, saved another bridge that was imminently going to collapse in a very similar way to the Silver Bridge. So this office, because of the Silver Bridge... this office was created that actually had saved more lives. So the office had parts of the bridge moved to in front of it and, like, used as an art installation memorial there.
Wow. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. It would have been cool to be there when they were pulling it out and see the air for the first time.
I would imagine that for some people it would be really emotional to see that.
Oh, yeah.
Because how many people died? It was like 50-something, right?
I believe 40. It was 48 without looking. 48. It could have been 46 or 48. Okay. I think it was 48, though.
Yeah, it was the high 40s.
Yeah.
46, 47, somewhere in there.
Wow. That's crazy. It is crazy. And, you know, I don't know if either one of you, Kyle, since we have you on and we're talking about Mothman, but Aaron Ryder has a new, well, it's not new anymore, but a new documentary kind of TV show. And one of the shows they focused on was the Mothman. And they talked about these two paranormal investigators who early, like 2009 or something, went up to that area that used to be the army that they feel the Mothman lives in now. I don't know what it's called there. They showed it, but they went there and they had this chilling EVP of this voice that says, you know, they asked Mothman, are you near or something, you know, and this chilling EVP comes out and it says, I am here, you know, and it's like this crazy voice. Ooh. And they, well, it was crazy, right? But they left there, and ever since that, they've had nothing but bad luck. I mean, terrible things have happened to them. And so the show was, they went back, and I don't know what whatever became of that. I only caught like half an hour of it, but what a cool story. That's why I tell Heidi I would never go looking for the Mothman, because I don't need any bad luck following me. Because they said everything just went shattered in their lives. You know, everything happened to them after that. It's, you know, and so it's very interesting, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea of Mothman, like the eternal question is he a harbinger of doom or is he some sort of prophet to warn people? And mm-hmm. that definitely gives kind of the harbinger of doom idea there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So anywho, but yeah,
I don't know. I'm still up for getting some FaceTime with Mothman.
I'll let you and Kyle go do that, Heidi. You guys can handle that.
I'm still up for it. Yeah. Got to check this thing out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We actually, there's a group out of New York, I believe, called Para Expeditions that did a Mothman excursion this year that we joined up with. And we actually got to do a whole EVP session in one of those igloos there at the TNT session, or at the TNT area. And actually we had access, well, it's public land, you can access whatever you want, but we went to like three of them and like did these whole like weird, like not, it wasn't straight like ghost hunting techniques. We had this system where we played some tones that are thought to help improve abilities, not quite white noise, but just sure. ultra or low frequency tones that are thought to reverberate energy and stuff
mm-hmm,
like that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That is cool.
It was it was definitely a really cool little excursion. That was my first time out in the actual TNT area, so definitely mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, awesome. That is cool. That is cool. So tonight, though, we're talking about lights in the sky at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go ahead and just jump right in. I wanted to mention, last year, so of course you and I, or we all talked last year, and a few days after that, on Christmas Eve in South Carolina, well, actually right off the coast of South Carolina, there's an island called Kiowa, I believe. It's about 25 miles south of Charleston. And this woman named Deborah recorded this red sphere that she saw that just hovered like over the water for, she said it was an extended period of time. Later she posted it on Facebook and, this red sphere was actually seen, like several eyewitnesses came forward. And like it actually generated like a big, you know, tongue in cheek news article for a while that, like there in Charleston and then got picked up across the state. And then I think even Fox News mentioned it. But there ended up being over a dozen eyewitnesses.
Oh, wow.
And that's just a year ago. So I thought that was pretty neat. But honestly, a lot of the UFO sightings, especially around Christmas, for some reason are focused around England, which England's always had a pretty consistent amount of UFO sightings, especially for how big it is, like compared to America. Mm-hmm. Like they've always had consistent. And then, of course, crop circles happen in England much more frequently than in the States here. So it's definitely an idea that it's a hot spot area of activity. But I was looking and it seems like most people, I found like three different accounts across the United Kingdom there about these orange lights that are always seen in December. And like for instance, there's a place called Evesham, England. And in 2008, this one woman, here, let me pull up her name here. But she reported to the BBC, Michelle, that she saw these orange lights. It was one orange light at first, about 5:30 p.m. And then it was just hovering and silently moving. And then it shrank and zoomed off. So she's like, oh, that's weird. And then the next night, actually on Christmas, she saw three of these orange balls. And it was right at the same time from the first night. She saw the first one, and then the other two came out, and she watched for about a minute, and then they disappeared, like, took a right angle and just disappeared. So, pretty strange. She, went on record, contacted the BBC about it and stuff, and they posted on it. And since they posted it on it, they've had tons of people in the exact same area report the exact same thing. The best story is this one guy named John, who he was looking through the BBC archives and saw the story that Michelle put, and he had the exact same sighting on the exact same night. Well, he missed the Christmas Eve one, but on Christmas night he had a sighting of the three orange lights in the same area. His son and family were visiting them. His son was full grown. They were there for Christmas, and they decided to go back home. So he went outside and said goodbye, and they left the little parking lot. And as soon as the guy turned back to the house, he spotted all three of the three bright orange lights. He says it was about 5:15 to 5:30, and they appeared to be traveling over a road on an east to west flight path, but did not be they weren't going super fast. So he went back inside, got his wife. She came back out, and they all saw him. They were all in this formation, but they were moving enough that he could tell that they weren't one singular craft. And they watched him until they couldn't see him anymore. And it's something he completely had let go of in his mind until he read the Michelle story, and he's like, oh my God, the exact same thing, you know?
So did anybody get any photos or video or anything?
No, he even mentioned in it that, which of course that's a whole side thought, is that this phenomenon makes you forget to, document it. But, he mentioned that, they're big on taking photography, they're big on pictures and everything, and just eventually thought to go get a camera, but that, by that time it was too late, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dang. But yeah, what a lot of people say, and I think maybe that's the same thing with other cryptids too, because there's really, with everybody that has a phone on them nowadays with a camera, and so few pictures are taken, it's like, is there something happening that's keeping you from having normal thought? Like, it kind of stuns you or puts you in this place that you really aren't thinking clearly. I don't know, because how can that many people see something and there's no photos or videos or anything?
Exactly. And I live in central Kentucky now, but a few years ago I lived in eastern Kentucky, which is Appalachia, which is, a weird place in itself. It's very curvy, and one day I was driving, owned a business, and I went and picked up some stock, and I was going back to the business, and I turned a corner, one of these little Appalachian foothills, and there was a UFO hovering over the mountain in front of me, and I kind of stared at it. This is not the first UFO I've seen, but still to this day, the closest I've ever seen, the only daytime sighting I've ever seen, and it was phenomenal. And my thought process wasn't, holy crap, I didn't slam on my brakes, start taking pictures. I just thought, oh, that's kind of strange. And I'm looking at it as I'm still driving. And I specifically remembered there's other cars. No one else hit their brakes. No one else acted like there was anything strange going on. And I just kind of thought, I'm watching it out the window as I'm still driving and think, oh, that's strange. And then I get to a point where I'm turning, and because of the roof of my car, it disappears from my view. And as soon as that happens, let me go back. I don't remember any of this story until a week later. I'm driving in the exact same spot on that highway. And I think, hold, I blocked it all out of my head until I was in the exact same spot a week later. And then I remembered it, and I pieced together everything I've just told you.
But that's interesting.
After I saw it, and it disappeared from my view, I have no memories whatsoever for about half an hour. I don't think I was abducted or anything. It's definitely missing time. But like, I have no memories for about a half an hour, when suddenly I remember being about half an hour further down the road. Mm-hmm. So honestly, what I think is that the UFO had some sort of, I don't know, this sounds like I'm a weirdo, but it had some sort of like forget signal, like psychic signal that it shot off.
I've heard of that before, Kyle. You're not the only one that I've been hearing this story from. Yeah.
Yep. I've talked to people who've had UFO encounters where they've lost time.
Yeah.
And they say that thing. They're like, I just all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, I'm further down the road driving, just like you.
Right.
And they have no idea how they got there and didn't get in an accident.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's definitely an idea of highway hypnosis, which is a common thing where if you're driving out in, let's say, Nevada or something where it's a straight shot for 100 miles, you kind of zone out and you can't specifically remember it. But I wasn't driving somewhere where I can I could zone out like that. Like, it's the Appalachian foothills. Like, the fastest you can go is 50. And it twists and turns. I mean, there's even specific stoplights that I went through that I have no memory of. So it's definitely crazy. Like, obviously missing time's a big thing, but like, I definitely don't have that association with the abduction that is often put with it, you know?
Yeah. Right. Which I've heard that. I've heard about having the missing time without all the other stuff. So I think I think there might be something to this idea where there's some kind of vibration that's sent out, because otherwise we're fully functioning. You know?
Exactly. I mean,
you're driving, you're going through stoplights, you're obeying all the traffic signals and the rules of the road. You know, if you weren't functioning because you're not having any kind of connection to your body, you probably would have ended up in the ditch, or smashed
into a mountain there.
Yeah, or off the mountain. I mean, so there has to be something that has some kind of, I would assume some kind of intelligence that allows you to be functional without having memory. And that's super, super scary, actually.
It is super scary.
Yeah. Some sort of like beta blocker thing that just stops your consciousness from everything else, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I get that we go into kind of, it is. I mean, I know that there's times where any one of us would probably go into, autopilot, when you're driving and then you kind of forget like how far have I gone? Oh my God, how did I get here? I think all of us have had that kind of, moment, but not when you're watching something that's really interesting. Like if something has your attention, you're not going to zone out.
No.
Yeah. And that's how memory works. Like the more different an event is from the rest of the course of your life, the more strongly it will impact your memories. So I had a life, like I had never seen a UFO this close before. Like it had rivets. Like I noticed it enough to see like details. And then as soon as it's out of my field of view, it's gone from my memory. And I really think whatever it was just didn't fully work. Like it's supposed to be like an ignore, forget signal. And I just like part of it still got through to me,
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Crazy. Oh my gosh. You know what? A half an hour has flown by. So we need to go to commercial break. So stay tuned, everyone. We will be back in 2 minutes. This is the Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
What happens to a ghost when their home is torn down? No one thinks of the disembodied when they rip down old buildings, dig up cemeteries, and build clean, unhauntable condos. Every year, hundreds of spirits are driven out of their own haunts by the careless living to exist alone with no one to scare. At Para-X Radio, our hosts feel the plight of these evicted disembodied, and we're reaching out to you to please open your heart to one of these lost souls, such as the ghost soldier of the General Wayne Inn or the abandoned spirit cat of Benjamin Rush. So please, please, let a little spooky into your life. Won't you open your house to a ghost without a home?
Para X.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and well, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead. We know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files. Only on Parax.
Welcome back to the Gathering Radio Show here on the ParaX Network, and we have Kyle with us telling us some cool stories about UFOs and holiday lights and all this cool stuff. So we'll pick it back up. Kyle, I know you were telling us a story about your own personal experience, and what else do you have for us about UFOs and holiday lights and all that jazz?
Yeah, well, I'll go ahead and skip up to the main one. One of the most famous UFO encounters ever to happen actually happened the day after Christmas here in England. It's called the Rendlesham Forest Incident. It's been referred to as Britain's Roswell. But honestly, it's much more of an intriguing case, I think. Like there's a lot more layers to it, and I still living eyewitnesses that have encountered this UFO and can still talk about it to this day. But anyways, in 1980, so kind of politically, there's a lot going on in the world. Margaret Thatcher agreed to let the U.S. increase their military presence in England because of other concerns they had in the area. But anyways, because of that, there were several Air Force, like Royal Air Force bases that became joint American and British bases. There's this one set of bases in particular that were covered by, they were Royal Air Force bases, but they were almost fully occupied by American forces. And in between these two bases, they were right next to each other, is this area called the Rendlesham Forest. And the Rendlesham Forest kind of connected these two bases. And unbeknownst to most Britons, or British people at the time, they had a crap load of nuclear weapons that America brought over with them. So I'm sure that that wasn't going to be okay with everyone, but it was top secret information. Mm-hmm. So anyways, while stationed over at the Rendlesham area, this was in Suffolk, England, and there's this guy, Jim Peniston, I believe, that was out on patrol. He's a, he's a staff sergeant, and he was actually out patrolling some stuff that, on patrol during the night, and suddenly saw a bright light, like, streak across the sky and land in this forest. And it was white, and so he started to investigate. When he got closer, he saw the white light and these multicolored lights kind of with it. And he immediately thought that it was some sort of downed aircraft. And so he went to investigate. He was with this other guy named John Burroughs, who was an airman first class. And they went to go investigate this crashed spaceship. He signaled to the base that there was an emergency situation and went out to the woods to investigate it. And he got a little bit closer and he noticed that through the trees, something had fallen through the trees. There was scorch marks, or he didn't see the scorch marks till daytime when they did the investigation, but there were broken branches and something had, he thought, crashed. And as he got closer, he realized it didn't crash. It was actually some sort of aircraft that had landed in the woods. And these lights aren't fire. It's emanating from the craft itself.
Oh.
So they walk towards this craft. He gets close enough that He can't really tell what's going on, but he realizes it's not a downed aircraft and starts getting worried that it's some sort of attack on the base. So he cancels the emergency situation call and then puts out that he's going into helping hands mode or something, that's basically saying there could be a hostile threat to the base. So he walks up to this craft. He's like 10 feet away, and he notices it's glowing. It's much smaller than anything he's seen. It's definitely not an Air Force, either U.S. or Royal Air Force craft. He has no idea. He's never seen it before. And this guy's actually, like, works with aircraft. Obviously, he's in the Air Force, but he specifically has experience identifying different military aircraft. And so he clearly knows that it's just not something that he's ever recognized before.
Right.
So he goes in, and he has a full story here that officially the Royal Air Force denied for a long time. Still denies most of it, but I'll go with the official Air Force one now. So they see this craft, and eventually when they get close enough to it, it raises up out of the trees and flies through the trees, like literally intelligent life is like controlling it because it's avoiding trees and escapes them being able to see it. So the next day, December 27th, they do a full report. The guy's terrified. He talks all about it. The whole base is buzzing with UFO talk. And then there's this other guy, John Holt, I believe, that is full-on skeptic. He was a higher-up military person and said, this is just ridiculous. If there's anything out there, we'll find it. And so they go and investigate it, and in the spot where the original guys saw the craft land, there were three indentations of where the feet to the craft were. Now, this is...
Oh.
End of December, England, the ground is frozen solid. So whatever this is must have been heavy. But when Jim Peniston walked up to it, he said that it was like much smaller, like a human, didn't look like a human could really even fit in it. So it was much smaller than even him. He was taller than it. And whatever it was so heavy, it left these marks on it. So... The guy mentioned Holt that was a skeptic. One of his kind of ways that he operated is he took an audio recorder with him everywhere whenever he did anything. So he starts making notes about the indentations in the ground. And they have a Geiger counter, and they actually have measurable radiation that's higher than the normal background radiation, like significantly higher. Wow. And I'll fast forward a little bit. Years later, the British Air Force, the British government declassified a bunch of UFO-related reports, and an investigation about this was in there. And one of the people that were talking about it in the Air Force said that the witnesses who were first on the scene probably got radiation, absorbed a high amount of radiation from the craft.
Wow.
And like so... The government says, yeah, they probably got radiation from this UFO they've seen. So years later, this Jim Peniston guy is getting sick from things that, like, sicknesses that you associate with people with radiation. He actually gets the VA to get a copy of that British report that's now declassified, and uses that to get the government to give him full benefits. So he legally, the VA recognizes that something happened where he was injured with radiation in the line of duty in December of 1980. And the only thing that happened was he saw this UFO.
Wow. Wow. Well, so they're at least saying that something happened. They're, you know, maybe not going all in, but that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's been... fully, like, yeah, they didn't go into details, but they're like, okay, and he has full benefits from the VA. So that's awesome. You know, that's fully acknowledged.
And where was that? Where did that take place?
It's called Rendlesham Forest. It was in Suffolk, England.
England. Wow. Yeah.
And so, yeah, the let's go back to their have the Geiger counter. They're measuring all this radiation. They note the branches that broke because of the essentially the UFO landing. They've noticed that there's burn marks on some of the trees. So it was hot, like temperature-wise and with radiation. And while they're investigating this, this staunch skeptic sees a UFO again. And while he's recording the audio tape, it's actually now free for the public to listen to. He sees a UFO and he's describing what he's seen. That like it's a glowing light that looks like it's putting off sparks or molten metal or something like that. And it's just like fully documented, you know?
Wow.
And so that's crazy. So this happened two nights in a row. And the third night, there's yet another UFO sighting. And this time it's by several more agents and or like military personnel. And some of the Royal Air Force, some of the British Air Force personnel see it as well. And so it's all fully documented. There's declassified documents talking about all this. There's listings of the radiation readings. There's the measurements of the indentations on the ground from where the UFO landed. And so this is real, quote-unquote, evidence, you know?
Wow.
That
that's cool.
It's awesome.
That's so, very cool.
In addition to that, the craziest part of the story, there is no evidence for. And I will go ahead and tell you. Remember I said Jim Tennyson had a different story of what happened the first night when he saw the UFO. Mm-hmm. He was debriefed, and he told them the full story of what happened. And these agents came in, gave him an altered report of what he said was going to happen, and made him sign it. And in that altered report, he said he never got within 50 feet of the craft. It always maneuvered to where they could never get close to it. So he claims he was forced to sign this, and that was the story he told until he eventually left the service. So now the story he tells is that he did get closer than 50 feet. He actually walked right up to the damn thing and touched it.
Oh my God.
He walks up to, he gets within feet of this craft and he's observing it. And it's multicolored lights. It looks like the craft is just metal or something, but the actual metal itself is lighting up. And eventually, while he's watching it, it stops lighting up. The underside of it is still lit up, but the top of it just turns to this like black, opaque glass type thing. And so he's just looking at it like, what the hell is this thing? And he walks up and eventually gets to a side of it, and there's writing on it. There's like hieroglyphs, he said. There's like five or six symbols that are about 3 feet long on the side of the craft. And he, for whatever reason, decides to touch it. And he said that he touched the regular part of the ship first, and it was ice cold, and it was smooth like glass. And then he felt the indentations of the hieroglyphs that he called them. And it felt like he was moving from glass to like rough sandpaper where the hieroglyphs were. Like it was completely etched in the glass there.
Wow.
And so he said after he touched a couple of the different spots, one of the glyphs kind of looked like a triangle, like a pyramid. And he touched that. And as soon as he touched that, Jim said that he has this blinding white light enter his eyes that like he gets an instant headache. He can't see anything. And like it kind of knocks him back a couple feet. And he now refers to that as the download. And what that means is he claims that when he touched that inside that white light, there was just the source of information that was all ones and zeros. Now this is 1980 and this, he was not a computer guy. So he really wasn't even aware of the binary system of ones and zeros that computers read.
Mm-hmm.
So he just had these numbers burned into his head. He couldn't stop thinking about him. So a couple days later, after all this happens, he sits down with a little notebook. And it's the same notebook he made notes of, like when he was out in the field, he actually made notes about it and everything. And he just sits down in this notebook and starts writing these ones and zeros that he sees in his head. And like for the days leading up to this, he's been tormented by this whole thing he's seen. And like he has this headache and just keeps seeing these ones and zeros. And so he starts writing them down. And he says as soon as he starts writing down the ones and zeros that he starts feeling better. And so over the course of several pages in his little notebook, he writes down just this series of ones and zeros. And as soon as he's done, he closes the notebook and then puts it away for 30 years and never thinks about it again.
Ah.
So fast forward to 2010, and Jim is being interviewed about this incident. And he says, well, yeah, I actually wrote down what the symbols look like. He was talking about the hieroglyphs. He said, I wrote down what the symbols look like in my notebook. Let me get it. And so he gets the notebook and starts flipping through it. And the reporter sees the ones and zeros. And the reporter says, what the hell's this? Like, he says, oh, well, I don't really know. I call it the download. But as soon as I touched the ship, this has all entered my head. And so this reporter took the numbers, the ones and zeros, who in 2010 is now very familiar with binary, and had them translated to see if it was anything. And it was. It was a message. And not all of it made complete sense, because either he messed up some of the ones or zeros or didn't remember it or anything like that. But for just an Air Force staff sergeant who doesn't work with computers to write down a series of binary ones and zeros that actually translates to something coherent is phenomenal. And actually have written down in front of me here what the translation says. It was several words, not all of them came completely through, and then it's a set of coordinates to different places in the world. So it starts off saying exploration of humanity, and then there's a set of coordinates. And then it says continuous for planetary advance. And then it says fourth coordinate, continuous. And then it doesn't really, like, it's jumbled there. And then it's a set of several coordinates. And then it says eyes of your eyes. And then it says origin. And it's a set of coordinates. And it says origin year 8100.
Oh.
So the coordinates are to different sacred spots in the world.
Wow.
One of them is to the Great Pyramid in Giza, Egypt. One of them is Sedona, Arizona, which is where, like, one the big gravitational vortex is. Mm-hmm. And the Nazca Lines in Peru. One of them is the Temple of Apollo in Greece. And where it says that the origin is from is a set of coordinates for an island that doesn't exist called High Brazil. And High Brazil is from Celtic traditions. That it's, High Brazil is basically their version of Atlantis, where on old maps, this island appears, and it's said to be a peaceful place of advanced civilization and everything. And I mean, the island just doesn't exist in the world we live in, you know? And so it says that's where it's from, and that it's the origin year 8100. And so the Jim Tennyson guy that experienced this wholeheartedly believes that what this craft was an alien. It was some sort of interdimensional craft from us humans in the future coming back and exploring humanity. And to add to that, I was watching this Nick Pope video talking about this, and Nick Pope brought up this professor that's actually working on a time machine, like a literal time machine, to be able to send messages and eventually travel back and forth in time. And this professor has no influence or no nothing to do with the Schindelheim Forest incident. And he said that the most efficient way to send, like how you would send a message in time, either backwards or future, would be binary. And he figured out, he thought theoretically he knew how to do it. So
wow.
That's phenomenal, you know?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
It is crazy.
You know, and I wonder too, because you said that there were three sightings in a row, right, at this time? And it's at the holiday, which we look at the holiday, but I also wonder if it had something to do, because there might have been other sightings that were missed before this. I wonder if it has something to do with, you know, we have the changing of the seasons, you know, with December 21st. And I wonder if there's something with the energy or vibration of the planet, or at least this hemisphere, that they want to travel, or it makes it easier to get around, or something has shifted that makes them curious, that, I don't know. I'm thinking about that kind of stuff with, you know, just the whole idea of maybe UFO activity in the holiday time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of, like, I agree with you. Traditionally, well, December 21st is the winter solstice. It's the longest night of the year. And that was kind of, even before Christmas was the winter holiday, there was a festival for winter solstice, and it was kind of to like brighten your spirits, because it was the start of the season for like the witches and everything. It was their longest night, you know, and so it was like the Yule logs we talked about last year were kept burning to keep the darkness away, so there's an absolute thought of that. And in addition, I feel like Christmas is, you know, like you're spending time with people you don't normally spend time with. So you're doing things more, I don't want to say mundane, but more traditional, like staring up at the sky instead of, you know, personally binge watching whatever, you know, you're doing more together things. And so it makes sense that like the idea of lights in the sky are more prominent, you know, you're looking up at the sky and just contemplating the season. It's cold, everything's quiet, it seems dead, and so you're just looking up to the skies for light, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's wild. And it's wild how much information this guy got, you know, not being familiar with binary code, and then, you know, being translated that long, that in the, you know, that far down the road, and it makes complete sense. I mean, I wouldn't even know how to look up binary code to write it down in a book that I could pretend like I got it downloaded. Like, I don't know how to do that. And I know there's a lot of people out there that could. I'm not saying that, but I don't think anybody would do that, you know, to come up with something that fake it.
And that's one of the problems, like, that the skeptics have with this story, well, specifically his story, is that, like, he supposedly didn't even open this notebook for 30 years. Until a reporter saw it in 2010. And he's offered to have it like forensically dated to show that the ink has been on that page for 30 years, but that's never been done. And so some people think like it's a loose leaf notebook and he could have added those pages in afterwards. Like once he figured out what binary was, because literally it is a little strange. He didn't mention that aspect for years, but he also didn't talk about it for years because he's worried about his job. So,
And that makes sense, where people would keep it hidden because for all sorts of reasons. I mean, it's your work, it's your family, it's, you know, someone questioning your sanity for all the things that it might affect. I mean, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Wow. And the fact that there's this other island too. Who knew? I didn't know about that one up there in Scotland or Ireland or wherever. That
but if it doesn't exist yet, you know, because it's 8100.
Oh, so it's from the future is what you're saying.
Right.
Well, that's like, that's the questionable thing, because some of our old maps that are based on Celtic, like legends of travelers from far away coming and saying, here, you can use my map. It has this island on it, and it had the exact coordinates from that island. So yeah, it was very much an Atlantis type thing. Like maybe the island is there and it's like Brigadoon. You can only see it once every 100 years or whatever.
Oh,
who knows, you know? But like, that was such a weird like, if this guy, if that gym guy did make it up, like, number one, he had to learn binary, and number two, he had to study Celtic traditions of fabled islands, you know?
Yeah. So right.
It's pretty phenomenal.
It just seems a little far-fetched to come up with something like that for a hoax or, you know, exactly. a scam.
Oh, I agree.
But, you know, and Dave in the chat room was saying 8,100 from when, and that could be the past. You know, I guess the context is implying it was maybe
true.
Future, but I guess it could be the, you know, it could be the past, and this could be someone that's, you know, because you look at all those sites that you were talking about, and a lot of those were built after that time, you know, so if they were here then, and they were going around, and that was one of the theories, too, is that, you know, aliens helped build a lot of these wonders of the world, so to speak, and whatever you want to call them, you know, that aliens had their hand in it, especially some of these pyramids, you know, that they were around first or with other, you know, humanoids or whoever, and helped build these and, you know, get this stuff set up, which seems so advanced for the time, or at least some of them. And then, you know, they're doing other things, you know, or I don't know. I just think it's fascinating.
It's crazy business. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Well, exactly. And it gives much more idea or credence to the idea of cyclical time. That, like, I mean, even that show Battlestar Galactica made a comment about, like, you think the show's in the future the whole time, and in the finale you find out it's in the past. Like, they are the dawning of humans, you know? Like, and that idea is so big. Like, it's pretty much well known in Freudian circles that we're at least the fifth, like, intelligent civilization that has been alive on this planet, you know, that all of the other ones have had mass extinctions, and that we are like the fifth try or whatever. And so who's to know, like, who's to say how far other ones got? Who's to say that, well, even from the John Keel idea, to bring it back to the Mothman, he's the author of the Mothman Prophecies, and at that point in his life he realized that it's all the same intelligence, that whatever we think of as ghosts and these UFOs and Bigfoot, it's all the same phenomena. It's the same intelligence, and it's not from another planet. It's from our planet, just in a different dimension. So like, Point Pleasant was a window area where things like the Men in Black and Bigfoot and UFO sightings and the Mothman were seen. And it's just whatever this intelligence is has always been here and will always continue to be.
Crazy. I love it.
Yeah, I do.
What
too.
A cool way to end the show, too.
Yeah.
It's like, wrap I that up in a nice bow.
Absolutely.
Well, we didn't get to half the stuff that you had for ideas, so we're probably going to come back on sooner, sooner than December.
I talk way too much sometimes.
No.
It's good stuff. This is
it's just fabulous. And we have so many comments and questions, too, so it kind of gets it going. But, yeah, we'll have to have you on before December, I think, to talk about
it. Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for being on again, Kyle. Wow, it's, you know, it's tradition now. You have to be on at Christmas time. But, yeah, let's rebook you again in a few months so that we can get back to this stuff, because there's lots of comments and questions on the chat board. And this was great. This was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And if anybody wants to get a hold of Kyle, you can find him at least on Facebook at the International Paranormal Museum and Research Center. They have a Facebook page that you can definitely connect with. And
Hopefully our website will be launching in the next couple weeks, and that will have an online store and blog and a lot
online
more
store.
Maybe I can get a t-shirt like yours, Heidi.
I know. I need another one.
I knew you would like that.
Yeah, for sure.
I love it. Good deal.
Oh, gosh. Well, so thank you, everyone. Listen, thank you, everyone, for joining us, and thank you for sticking with us for this another whole year. I mean, and happy holidays to all of you. And troops, if you're listening, be safe out there. Have a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and Happy Kwanzaa and Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. It's been an awesome year, Heidi.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. And we wish everybody a great end of your year. And we're looking forward to a really fun 2020. Thank you, Para X, for hosting us for this past year. And Sarge, you're the best producer on the planet for producing us for another year as well. So thank you so much. And to everybody listening, we just loved you to pieces. So
yeah,
thanks for sticking with us and tuning in and sharing your questions and your ideas for shows. We don't do this without you. So thank you, everybody.
Right. Yes.
And we're off now.
We're off.
Till next year.
Yes. See you all next year. Same time, same place. We'll be playing some really good reruns, so make sure you join us if you have the time next week and the following.
Yep. So everybody have a safe holiday, and we'll check in with you next year.